Okay, so we'll go to the verse number 20, where he's going to talk about the jnanam, the knowledge which is sattvic knowledge. So he starts with the highest knowledge, then goes to the mediocre, and then goes to the lowest. So verse number 20.
Sarvabhuteshu ye naikam. Bhavam avyayam ikshate. Avibhaktam vibhakteshu. Tatjnanam vidhi sattvikam.
So that jnanam, he says in the end, that jnanam vidhi, know that knowledge to be sattvikam. That jnanam vidhi sattvikam. What is sattvic knowledge? Sarva bhuteshu yena ekam. Yena means by which, it is the instrumental case. By that knowledge, by which knowledge? Sarva bhuteshu ekam, among all beings. Not only beings, means bhuta means not only humans, but animals, birds, plants, fish, among all bhutas, all beings, ekam bhavam, one essence, one reality, avyayam ikshate, sees, avyayam ikshate. Now, seeing is a very interesting word. And when we say see, especially in Tamil Nadu, if there are two Madrasis talking, they talk like that, you know, I'll say, I went to my friend's house. You see? I see. And I talked to him. You see? I see. And I told him, don't do this. You see? I see. And then he still didn't listen to me. You see? I see. And that's how they always talk. You know, they always have to say, you see and I see. And then the other guy will say, yes, but you know what? I told him, do this. You see? I see. So when they talk seeing, the friend is not seeing because the action happened yesterday or last week or last month. When they say see, it means understand. You understand what I'm saying, that I told him to do this and he still didn't listen and that's why he got, you see? And we also say that all the time. You see what happened? You know, action happened last week, but when we tell him you see what happened, it does not mean you see, but you understand that because of this wrong action, you had a wrong result. So that's why he says, sarva bhuteshu yena ekam, with that knowledge, among all beings, ekam bhavam, one essence, one reality, avyayam. That's one of the very important names of Bhagwan, of the Lord, is avyayam, which means immutable, unchanging, permanent, never modified. It always was the same, is the same, will be the same. Either, even when the universe now was not there, he was the same, or she, or it. You know, that's why in Vedanta, they call Brahman as it, because it is neither male nor female, it is the reality, the substratum. So that consciousness was the same, is the same, and will remain the same. Even when the universe ends, you and I will be gone, the planets will be gone. He says, na ye chand hoga, na tare rahenge, magar hum hamesha tumhare. So the idea is that the sun and the moon will be gone, but the Lord will always be there, and I will always be his. So that is the idea of this verse. So he says, sarva bhuteshu yena aikam bhavam avyayam ikshate, one who sees that one essence. Avibhaktam vibhakteshu. This is a very beautiful expression of Krishna's. He says, vibhakte, in among this, all this division, undivided. So like all these, like you and I are separate, like I'm separate from her and from her and from him and from the wall and from the picture and from the fan. But even though we are all separate, there is one unbroken entity that connects all of us. That jnanam vidhi sattvikam. So let us spend a little time. This is a very, very beautiful knowledge. So they say that everything is that one reality which became many. We have talked about many times, just as from mud, when in all the parts are created, they have different names and forms and shapes, but they are nothing but mud and mud alone. And mud is the substratum. You may paint it, you may color it, you may shape it, but the essence remains mud. You may not see the mud. You see the beautiful painted pot with the color and the gold. Same way, ornaments. You know, gold is there. You make different ornaments, color, shapes, and all, but the essence remains the same. So there is one reality, because we all emerge from God. God alone was there. That's what the Bible says. That's what all the scriptures say. The God alone was, and from that created the whole universe. So we are all created out of that one entity. And that one entity alone has become all these. So that understanding is sattvic. And once we are all emerged from that all, because we are all from one parent, we are all from that one source, then how can I be separate? So that understanding comes, and there is one reality which is illumining everything. And they say when you look within, then you see that one reality. If you look outside, you will see all different. And that's why in meditation we say quieten your mind and go within and experience the Lord's presence. And that is how the best way to experience the Lord's presence is to quieten the mind and go inward, because he's there with me. You know, that's what he says, Moko kaha dunde re bande, main to tere paas hoon. You know, Kabir Das ji says, I am neither in the temple, nor in the mosque, nor in the church. I am the breath of your breath. I am the mind of your mind. I am the heart of your heart. There is a beautiful text called Panchadashi. I think it was written by Vidyaranya Swami. It's a very, very nice text. And there he gives a very beautiful example. He says there is a theater. In the olden days, you know, the theater didn't have all these multiple colored lights. They would have one light that was shining. So he says there's an empty stage. The janitor has cleaned everything and set up the stage, and he has put the light on, which is shining on an empty stage. There is no audience, there is no actors, nothing. The theater is empty. And slowly the audience trickles in, and they sit down on the seats, and then the curtain is closed, the light is still shining, and then the curtain opens and the actors are there on the stage. And it maybe it is a comedy, or maybe it is a tragedy. Maybe it is a violent play. Maybe it's a horror. Maybe it's a murder. Maybe it's a mystery. So it doesn't matter what kind of play is being performed on the stage, that one light remains the same. The light is not affected by whether it's a comedy or a tragedy or a horror film or a mixture of those. It continues to illumine them unaffected. The light is not affected. The audience is affected. Audience is laughing when it is a comedy, crying when it is a tragedy. They are scared when it is a horror show or a horror movie. But the light remains the same. But without the light, you won't be able to see the play. The play can only be seen in the presence of the light. If the light is off, the stage will be dark. You won't be able to see anything. The light is necessary for the stage, for the play, but the light is not involved in the play. The light is not involved in the tragedy or the comedy, but the light is necessary. And the audience gets affected by the comedy, but the light is not. So the Lord within is like that light, which not only illumines me, but illumines the whole stage of this universe. This entire universe is a play. That's what Shakespeare said. This whole world is a play and we are all actors in it. And there are some, you know, for some it is a comedy, some it is a tragedy, some it is a horror, some it is a mixture of others, and, you know, all those things. And we get caught up in this. Oh, the world is so sad. Oh, the world is happy. World. If you identify with the body, mind, and intellect, and then with the body I'm involved in the world of objects, with the mind in the world of emotions, with the intellect in the world of thoughts, and the objects will be changing of the world, the emotions will be changing, the thoughts will be changing. And if I am caught up in the body, mind, and intellect, which most of us are, we think we are this body, mind, intellect, then you will be caught up in the comedy and tragedy of the world. If you are like the audience, but you say, I am the light. I am the light and I am illumining that. When I am the light, actually all of us are that light. All of us have this Om, this light, this consciousness that is not only within but also outside, is everywhere. Every one of us, in essence, we are all that light. We are occupying this body, mind, and intellect, and then I have a name called Anil or Pankaj or Satish or Barbara, these are my names. I'm male or female, young or old, short or tall, black or white. All these qualities are of the body, mind, and intellect. But if I think I am that consciousness, then the world can do whatever. The world can be in the happiness, I laugh. In the tragedy, I cry. But inside, I'm fine. Why? Because the world cannot affect me. Because I am here to enjoy this world as the body, mind, and intellect. I enjoy the world. I experience the world. World, whatever it does, I see it. Time to leave, I drop the body. And that's what Krishna says in the second chapter. You know, when the Vasamsi Jirnani Yatha Vihaya Navani Grihnati Naroparani, just as a person drops his old clothes when he doesn't need them anymore, so the individual doesn't need the body, he just drops it and takes a new body. So what is there to cry? Then there is no tragedy in the world. Then whole life becomes comedy. That's what they say. So one who sees this world as a comedy or a tragedy or a play, but it is happening, but I am not involved. It does not mean that he does not love people or he becomes a stone. In fact, he has more love for everybody because he sees the oneness. But he does not internally get affected. Internally, the person's mind becomes stationed in the Lord, in the self within. And then no matter what kind of sorrows, you know, Mirabai, how many problems she had? Jesus, how many problems he had? Tukaram, Sant Gyaneshwar, all of these saints, how many problems they had, all these Sikh gurus. But they were so established in the truth of the Lord that the world could not touch them. Why? Yasmin sthitona dukkena gurunapi vichalyate, Krishna says, one who is established in me, even the greatest sorrow cannot affect him. Why? Because he sees one thread in the whole universe. There is a very beautiful verse in the Gita. It says, Matav parataram nanyat kinchit asti dhananjaya mai sarvam idam proktam sutre mani ganam iva. He says, just as when there is a necklace consisting of various beads, you know, they could be pearls, they could be different colored beads, you know, colored necklace, different shapes, beads, maybe different, you know, configurations. But what holds them together is one thread. Could be a gold thread or could be just a cloth thread. So I am the thread that holds this whole universe together, this variety. There is nothing outside me, he says, but everything is held together by me. So one who perceives the one Lord holding this whole universe together, then who is my enemy, who is my friend? They are all me, they are all oneness. And that is the understanding of this sattvic individual. Ekam bhavam avyayam ikshate. And this Lord is avyayam. Then he says, avibhaktam vibhakteshu. Among this divided, it is undivided. What do you mean by undivided among the divided? Sounds very confusing. So they say, give the example like space. Like space. Now, there's a lot of space. Like there is a space in this glass. After I finish the water, there will be space. Then, this glass is in the room. So, there is a room space. Then, the room is in this big building. So, there is a building space. And then, the building space is in the total space. So, suppose this glass breaks. Of course, this won't break. It's steel. But suppose it was a glass. You know, what do you call the one that breaks? Shishaka. If it falls, it breaks. So the glass space will merge into the room space. And then we say, this room is too small. So let us break it and make it bigger. So you make it bigger. So then this room space becomes part of the building space. You make it bigger and bigger. Ultimately, you break it, make it one big hall. Why? Because we have made other classrooms. So we make one big hall. So what happens? All these little rooms become one with that building space. So there is only one building space. And then we say, we have outgrown this building. Let us demolish it. It's become too old. So we destroy the building. And then what happens? The building space becomes one with total space. And this total space is not only here, but extends even to the planets and the stars. You know, this recently they discovered a star that is only 4.5 light years away. And he says, at the speed of light, it will take you, you know, 20 years to reach at half the speed of light. They said probably in 100 years we can go there. So the point is that, and that is only the nearest star, and there are billions and trillions of such stars which are, so that much space, and that one space appears divided, right? Appears divided. There is a building space, there is a hall space, there is a room space, there is a glass space, there is a pot space, but actually it is only one space appears divided. But we are not able to divide space. It's not that you can divide space. You can artificially create an apparent division, but actually it's only one space. You cannot cut space. See, you can cut a solid object, but you cannot cut water. Can you cut water? No. Can you cut fire? No. All you can, a solid can only cut a solid. So space, being the subtlest of all, obviously cannot be cut. But we think it is divided, but actually there is only one space. And then think about it. If I take this glass, which has space in it, and I move it to the kitchen, am I moving the space? What do you think? Am I moving this glass space? No. I am not moving. The glass is moving in space. Even though people say, oh, there is this empty space. And I think, logically, I would say, I am moving the space. No. The space has nowhere to move because space is anywhere. The glass is moving in space. So the glass, which was here, has moved there. So from this space, it has gone to that space. It is occupying a different space. The space is not moved, the glass is moved. So similarly, that consciousness is even subtler than space, even more, even beyond space, up to wherever up to space goes. The consciousness is even beyond that, is even subtler than that. And that is a concept which is mind-boggling, because we think space goes on and on and on. And Bhagavan goes even beyond that? Yes. In fact, in the Purush Suktam, he says, only one part of me became this universe, three quarters is still beyond. But why don't we perceive it? Because it is a higher state of consciousness. It's not this visible world that we see. It is a world that you wake up to. Just as from a dream you wake up to this waking world. So they say wake up to that higher state of consciousness. Until you wake up, you will think this world alone is. There is nothing else. There may be a God somewhere, but I don't know where he is. But the saints and prophets tell us that once you realize the truth, once you discover the Lord within, you actually go beyond this world. And beyond this world does not mean that the person does not work, but he has woken up to his higher nature of Om, the higher nature of consciousness. And once having woken up, then for him this world is like a dream. See, for you and me, the world looks very real. The table is real, the walls are real, the fan is real. For them, for a saint, he says, this world is just a dream, it's just a play. That's why people like Shakespeare, who are so close to the truth, authors and poets and musicians are very close to the truth because they are artists. And they can feel that. But of course, they may not be as evolved as the saints, you know, like Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya. So once you have woken up to that reality, then you see the whole world as a dream, number one. Number two, you see oneness. The one alone is in all others. And this knowledge, how does it help us? You know, now you ask somebody, he goes for a job, right? And he says, what have you studied? He said, I have studied Gita, I have self-knowledge. What? You don't know physics, chemistry? No, I don't know. You're not going to help him get a job, right? If he goes for a job and says, I only know Gita. Or if the wife, you know, wife's in India, the wife's parents come and they're asking the, you know, the boy's parents, this is the olden days, you know, so what has your son studied? And you have to say he's a BA or MA or PhD and all. They say he has self-knowledge. This is self-knowledge? He's not going to be able to feed my daughter. So let us go find another husband. So this knowledge is not going to help you find a job. It's not going to help you find a wife. It's not going to make you rich. But what it is going to do is going to liberate you, to give you enlightenment. And that is the purpose of this knowledge. If you think by learning this knowledge, suddenly I'll become a multimillionaire, it's not going to happen. But you will become free. And that is what our biggest problem is, that we are caught up in this world. And we are all the time under stress. You know, things are going well, I'm happy. Things are not going well, I'm miserable at work, or in my family, or in my home, or in my surroundings. Weather is bad, I'm unhappy. Somebody doesn't smile at me, I'm unhappy. My project doesn't go well, I'm unhappy. My business was doing well, it goes down, I'm unhappy. My stock market is crashed, I'm unhappy. So we are all the time going through joys and sorrows, happy, and we are caught. They say, you know, dunya mein phas gaye. You know, that's why they say janjal hai. This world is like a net which has caught us. The only way to be free is to get this knowledge. All the other knowledges are necessary. We're not saying you shouldn't study chemistry or biology or medicine or engineering or law. Yeah, those will help you earn a living. But if you want to be free of this constant joy and sorrow, hatred, success, failure, you have to know the truth. You have to realize. Then you can live in the world. You can enjoy the world. You can actually do a better job. Why? Because then you are not you are not stressed out. You are free. You are happy. If you look at these saints, they were always happy, no matter what the world could do to them. Nobody could make them unhappy. Look at Tukaram. He comes home. Remember the story with that one? Such a funny story. He hardly used to work because all the time he was composing songs for Panduranga. He was always composing bhajans and song abhanga. His wife was very unhappy because he hardly used to work. So one day he goes and does a job and he gets some sugar cane. So he tells his wife, you know, today I'm going to work and after I finish, I'm going to get a big thing of sugar cane, a big package. So wife is happy, okay, we'll keep one or two, then we'll sell the others and at least we'll have some money to eat. So Tukaram goes, he does, works hard all day and he gets this big thing of sugar cane which he's carrying on his back, you know, with a rope tied. There's about 15, 20, 30 sugar canes and he's carrying them. And as he's going, he starts singing about the Lord. And once he starts singing, he forgets who he is, where he is. And he doesn't even remember. He just starts walking. Now the children of the village and on the road, they see that this guy is in his some dream. So they start pulling the sugar cane one by one. They pull all the sugar cane. He doesn't know. He doesn't realize because his mind is on the Lord. He thinks nothing. And he comes home. He only has one sugar cane left. He had about 30 and his wife was going to sell them and make money and get food. He's only one. So she says, what happened? He said, well, I brought this one sugar cane. She says, one? What happened to all the others? I don't know what happened. I don't know. I had a whole bundle. I don't know what happened. This is true. She gets so mad, she hammers the sugar cane on his back so bad that it broke in two. So he smilingly says, see, it's two now. You can have half and I'll have half. he was not at all. He said, very nice. See, it broke. Bahut achha. You can have half. So the saints, and they think very differently from you and me. We will think he's a fool, you know. But the abhangas he composed, even today, they are sung in Maharashtra and all over India. You know, these beautiful, with so much meaning, so much. Mirabai, you know, look at her bhajan. Even today, several hundred years from now, we are singing her bhajans. All the radio stations, TV stations, movies, everywhere they have Mirabai's bhajans. So these saints live forever. They don't think about, see, you and I think very differently. So that knowledge frees you from that problem. So that is the benefit of this knowledge. It helps us to be free. To be free of the worldly problems, to connect with the Lord, always live with the Lord, and then the world is not important. Then they said the world is a dream. And as we said, it connects all BMIs. You know, right now we are different. My body is different from hers, my mind is different from his, my intellect is different from his. So we are all different. Different nations, different colors, different humans, male, female, all this. But the one that connects, the one thread, that knowledge one who has that is called sattvic knowledge, which appearing to be disconnected, we are all connected. That's what everybody said. That's what Jesus said. That's what Buddha said. All the saints have told us that. And the one who sees that is sattvic. So the idea being that you and I have to start seeing people with love. Connect with all. Don't look at the separateness. Look at the oneness. Even when I am having problems with somebody, that the Lord is in him or Lord is in her. See that divinity. And when you see that divinity, then you are dealing with the Lord. Then how can there be any conflict? When I am the Lord, you are the Lord, we are all the Lord, then that oneness, one who sees, that is sattvic. So that is the verse number 20. Any questions, any comments? Yeah, I think if there is somebody truly evil, if you can avoid him, avoid him. But inside they don't hate. The saints are not even repulsed by the evil. Even if an evil person is, Jesus knew he was going to be crucified the next day. He could have easily left. But he didn't. He knew that the evil people are coming for him. The Romans are coming. And he did not leave. He was informed, you know, because he knew that. So the saints are not even repulsed by anybody. See, they are at that level where for them there is no evil. Everything is that my father. For him, everyone is my father. There is nobody separate from me. But you and I, while we are still functioning in the world, we may see that. But ideally, you should not consider anybody as evil. Yeah, if somebody is really harmful, maybe you may want to avoid him. But inside, you still don't hate him. You say it is still the Lord who is misdirected. Maybe you can say that. But inside there is no hatred. There is no feeling of separateness. And when you return somebody's hatred with love, with acceptance, a lot of times you may be able to change that individual's mind. You may be able to change him or her with your love. That's what a lot of times happens. If you answer hatred with repulsion, running away, then you are, what do you call it? Further feeding it. Further feeding that. But if you return it with, and it happens many times in an, you know, conflict situation, if one person responds with love, a lot of times you can diffuse the.
He had to pull himself away from the world because it was affecting
him. I think that what the saints, they sometimes say that, these realized masters, what happens is that even though they are realized, they have reached the highest, but they still have the human mind. And the mind still functions. So if the mind is made too busy into the world, it's not that he, yeah, because he was doing too many seminars, meeting too many people, signing, and then he was too involved in organizing and all that. And so he found that it was taking him away from his spiritual essence. So it's not that he had forgotten that, but by when you get too involved, that's why they say that for spiritual growth, you have to cut down your work. If you continue to work 16 hours a day and morning to night, and then you do not have time for yourself. So as you cut down the time, then you spend that time going inward. So once having reached, it's not that they get disturbed from that, but they find that they are doing too much. And now in the modern age, he doesn't need to do that much. See, a lot of things now he's doing through the internet. He doesn't need to travel. He doesn't need to do so many seminars. He doesn't need to meet this man. People can go online and listen to him, see him, buy his CDs, buy his books, you know. So a lot of things now can be done without meeting, and then he can just stay in his joy. So that is the point of Eckhart Tolle. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'm just assuming because he kind of mentioned it one time. I was at a seminar and he said he was going to start cutting down because, you know, too much activity is not good either. And then your mind is all the time in the mechanics of the seminar. Is it making a profit? Is it, you know, are the tickets being sold? You know, all those things. And you don't want to do too much of that. Even though there are other people to do it, but he was overall in charge. So. Oh,
you know.
Prayer works much beyond physical contact. You don't have to see a person to pray for him. You could pray for your child is somewhere in New York, or a child is in Africa or Europe, and she's going through a hard time. If you pray for her and you mentally connect with her, you can. Especially mothers are very, very much in tune with the children, men not so much. But they can connect very quickly with the near and dear ones. So people who are that evolved, like saintly people, like nuns and saints, they are in one with the whole universe. So they don't have to meet a person. They can. There are people who are meditating in the Himalayas, and they haven't seen people in years, and they are in deep meditation. But their vibrations are spreading to the whole universe. I had, mentioned one time, the story, our Maharaji in Kalimpong, not this one, but the senior one who passed away. We went to visit his ashram, his mission. I had told this story one time. And he had passed away about 8 or 10 years ago, and his successor, the young one, was in charge of the mission. And we went to the room where he was sleeping. We went to his cemetery where he was buried, because the saints don't get cremated, they get buried, so he was buried. So not so much there, but the room he used to sleep in, and there was a little bed and a very tiny room, about 8 feet by 10 feet. And when I sat in that bed, at the floor near his bed, I felt his presence very strongly. He had passed away 10 years ago, and he was still there. That energy was so powerful, I felt that his presence is even today there, 10, 12 years. So these saints never die because their energy is so powerful. So these people, they work at a very different level. They don't have to see a person. They don't have to be... Of course, if you can become in contact with a saint, it's very good. But I remember Eckhart Tolle, I used to go to his retreats, and I'll tell you the story. When he finished his talk, he would leave the stage, and we would keep sitting on the seat, and for 45 minutes, you could feel he's still there. He's gone, but his energy is still there. So they work at a very different, and see, actually, we are all energy. We are actually not matter. This looks solid, but we are all energy. Everything is energy. E equals mc squared. Einstein already proved it. So you and I are actually protons and neutrons and electrons. Even this table is not solid. It is protons and neutrons and electrons. So a person who can work on the energy level, he or she goes beyond the body. They don't need to see a person. They can work. My energy can connect to your energy or even to an energy of somebody in Africa because the energy is one. So that's a very minor. The physical contact is so basic. It's so gross. It's like living in the dark ages. In the modern, as we grow spiritually, people will talk through energy. They will talk through telepathy. The language that we speak is also very gross. The, you know, physical communication will become a very backward. Like nowadays, if you ask somebody, you know, use the old-fashioned phone with the landline and dialing that 1, 2, 3, you know, the dialing, they say, what are you doing? Yeah. It's the age of cell phones. You know, you just press and you can talk. You don't need to carry. You had to have, the olden days, we have these phone booths, you know, and all landlines and all. Now, these are all a stage of the past. Oh, who talks about landlines and phone booth? And nobody has. Why? Because this. So just as, or what Thomas Edison or, you know, the time before him when people to communicate, they had to physically drive, like take a horse wagon like that guy who went, you know, that was Paul Revere to give the news. He had to actually ride by horse from New York to Boston to tell them the British are coming. Nowadays, you don't pick up the phone and tell them the British are coming. So similarly, this communication will become so backward. We'll all be talking in telepathy. You know, you won't need to use these phones and all that. So what I'm saying is that that's the higher level of evolution. It's a very long answer to your question. But
no, I think the thing that still, does that change what God has planned?
Well, there are two things. What prayer does, what I have understood, that prayer connects me with the higher. Right? So it helps me right away. If I pray for somebody else, oh God, help this person, right away it gives me peace because it becomes a very unselfish act, number one. Number two, it connects me with the Lord within. So it makes me peaceful. Thirdly, there is a benefit to the prayer. And what I have understood is that there is a law of karma. Right? There are karmas are there. But a person who prays for himself or who is constantly praying, or a lot of people are praying for him, that karma gets modified. The Lord will not completely change it, but will be able to modify it. But a place like Syria, where there is so much violence and, you know, so many people's karmas are there, a lot of times the law of karma has to take effect. What all you and I can do is just pray for peace. And the prayer, it never goes wasted. Because somewhere or the other, it will have an effect. Prayer, because what it does, you connects you to that higher energy. And definitely there is a lot of benefit in prayer. You all know that. You know, when you pray for your daughter, when you pray for your son, when you pray for health, the prayers do get answered. The Lord is not sitting like a judge and just, you know, punishing us. He's all love and compassion. And when you approach him with love and compassion, you will get his love and compassion. When you approach him with love, you will get his love and compassion and kindness. And if nothing else, your mind will be at peace. So praying is always good. But do not pray for an object. See, a lot of times we go and pray to the Lord with a shopping list. You know, give me a house, give me a car, make sure my daughter gets married. You know, that's a big prayer. All the parents do that. And make sure my, you know, car stays healthy. It doesn't have an, you know, all those things. Even robbers, when they go to rob a bank, oh Lord, make sure the guards are sleeping and make sure the alarms I can turn off. So you are praying for an object. They say when you go to the Lord, pray for him. I want you. If you use the Lord to pray for something else, you say, oh Lord, get me a BMW, right? Now what happened? Who became more important, the Lord or the BMW? The BMW, right? Through the Lord, I can get a BMW. So the Lord became the instrument, BMW became something I want. So don't use the Lord as an instrument. Don't use him as an agent. Don't use him as a broker. You know, Lord, get me this house. That is nonsense. You pray to the Lord, give me you. Oh Lord, I want you. I do not want you to get me all these things. If it is in my karma, if I put the right action, I will get it. What I want from you is you. That's what Mirabai said. Mere to Giridhar Gopal. What was the second line? Dusro na koi. Lord, Krishna alone is mine. Dusro na koi. Nobody else. I want him and him alone. That is the only thing you pray to the Lord for. There's no need. Of course, praying for world peace and all those things are good. When we end with Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina. May everybody be happy and all that. That is good. But when you pray, say, I want you. You come in my heart. That's what Shankaracharya says, Atma Tvam Girija Mati. You are myself. You are my nature. Stay with me. Shariram Griham. Make my body your home. Stay here, O Lord. Never leave me. Never. And Lord will never leave, but may I never forget you. See, that is the essence of the prayer. You pray for that, not for useless things. That you will get. If you deserve it, you will get it. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi, Harihi Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.